You guys good? All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the May 15th regular meeting of the Board of Trustees of San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board met in closed session. We discussed a student discipline and confidential matter. We discussed a stipulated student expulsion hearing, and then we had anticipated litigation, significant exposure to two potential cases. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, good. Item 4.03, action on stipulated student discipline agreement. In closed session, the board voted 7-0 to accept the stipulated expulsion agreement. Let's move on to item number 4.04, approval of minutes from 5-1. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
I'll move approval of the minutes from May 1st.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry, second by Mr. Buckman. Any discussion? I'm going to abstain from that since I wasn't at the meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One abstention, please. It passes 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to item number 4.05, approval of minutes of 5-10. Somebody like to make a motion for that?
Mrs. Roger.
I'll move approval.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger.
I'll second.
Second by Mrs. Sheffer. Again, I'm going to abstain. I was not at that meeting either. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to item numbers 5.01, student representatives to the board. Do you have, either of you have a preference on who gets to go first? Zoe.
Hello. So our Elks Senior of the Years were announced, and Hiram Burris and Aspen Bryant got Seniors of the Year, so congratulations to them. There will be a dinner on May 14th at the Elks Club in their honor. The Loams and MBHS Choir and Theater Groups are combining to create a concert entitled Destinations. They're playing a bunch of songs from around the world, and our very own Dr. Brescia, our county superintendent, will be performing as well at the PAC on May 24th at 7 p.m. This week is our final Spirit Week and Dance of the Year. We decided to focus on seniors with days such as Senioritis, which is Monday, so everyone wore pajamas to school, and College Gear Day, which was today, so a whole ton of kids were decked out in college gear. And then this Friday is our last dance called Set Sail, because the seniors will be setting sail for a new future, and seniors get half-off tickets. And then this Thursday is our open house. A bunch of students have been building projects and displays in our English departments and in our science departments. And then this week it will be announced that we will be graduating on the new baseball field. So because our old football field is still under construction, we sadly weren't able to graduate there, so we have to use the baseball field. And then over the past 2 weeks, students have been taking part in AP testing, and the psychology and sociology classes decided to create stress relievers for them to use before starting their tests, such as stress balls, for support of Mental Health Awareness Week. And then last week, students set up a table with a variety of rocks and paint for students to decorate during lunch and relieve anxiety and school stress. Also last week, we had our first kickball tournament on our West Field. We had 8 teams competing, and the team Theo roped us into this with Captain Theo, won the tournament and received MBHS gear. The tournament was super fun, and it was the first time that we've done this, and I think it was the best one by far. So that's it. And I wanted to thank you guys, because this is my last meeting. I'll be passing it on to Annalise over there. But yeah, thanks for, it's been such a nice experience. So
Good evening, everyone. Hopefully you're all doing well. So
This Thursday, our ceramics department will be having our Empty Bowls fundraiser at Farmer's Market downtown, where they sell bowls for $20, and then you can fill that bowl with some food by a sponsored organization or a partner organization like Novo or Pizza Solo. And we have a bunch of other different organizations that provide food. Your $20 donation goes towards the Slow Food Bank and Prado Day Center. So last year they made a couple $1,000s, and we hope to make even more money through that fundraiser this year. Ms. Edel has been working a tremendous amount trying to get it publicized properly, and she's done an incredible job. Unfortunately, she'll be leaving this year, but she's done an incredible job as a teacher as well as organizing that fundraiser. So if you want to buy a bowl, Farmer's Market, Thursday. I'll be there at 7:30. I'll show you my bowls. They're not very good. Don't buy them. I'll tell you which ones not to buy. It's the ones I made. But you get a lot of food for the bowl if you get the right one. So, yes. And then on Friday, we have our Tiger Olympics, where our elementary schools, sixth graders come over and they compete against each other at sports like soccer, tug of war, basketball, and then we tour them around campus, show them what Slow High is up to. So that's always a fun, interesting time of the year when you have a bunch of sixth graders running around campus. And then after that, we have on Tuesday our eighth grader senior recognition assembly kind of collaboration, where seniors are recognized for their accomplishments throughout high school. We recognize where they're going to college, what they're doing after their careers, whether if it's a job or community college. And that's really where we show these eighth graders that Slo High has an expectation of greatness, and that's where I saw how amazing our students at Slo High are and continue to see that. Students like Bella Stenvall, Jonna Roberts, Sam Eisendrath, Nick Dacry, like those names I remember because these are the students that have left impressions on me and made me strive to want to be like them. So hopefully our senior class has done something to the lower classes, something that emulates that, hopefully. So that's on Tuesday. We'll show eighth graders around, get them assimilated to campus, as well as recognizing some of our club members. And I've talked to some of the district office staff about getting NHS recognized. I am glad to report National Honor Society will get certificates and be recognized for whatever we've done these past 3 years. So thank you for helping out in that cause. And Mr. O'Connor really approved it, like I think last week. So thank you. And then I was scrolling through Twitter yesterday or today, actually, and I saw that the Tribune had posted something from the U.S. News saying that Slo High was one of the top-ranked schools or something. And, of course, I fell victim to only reading the headline. I didn't actually read the article. So thank you to the staff from Slo High that are here that made that possible. I didn't read into the article, but if U.S. News recognizes us nationally, we probably did something great, so thank you. It's not possible without the Slo High staff. And that's my report. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that Slo High was recognized as the number 147th high school somewhere, you know, out of 500 high schools or something like that. 700 in the state. Yeah, there we go. So, as always, you're welcome to stay and participate in the discussions that we have regarding any issue that's on our agenda. Of course, we recognize that you're probably really busy and you got other stuff you want to do. So, feel free to stay or go. There's gonna be cake in the back. I'm sure it's gonna be delicious. So now I think we get to the point why we're all here tonight. And that's to recognize our employees of the year. So to bring that forward, Mrs. Newland.
This is the greatest time of the year when we get to recognize all of our...
Turn your mic
on.
Got the bass.
There you go.
Okay, this is the greatest time of the year when we get to recognize all of our fantastic San Luis Coastal employees. And this year we're bringing to you our nominees in addition to our winners, because we want you to see our great employees that we have in our district. So I'd like to ask the board if you could come in front of the dais, because we're going to call up our nominees and they really would love to shake your hand and say hello to you. And then they're going to go back and have photos taken over there. And so Luana's going to help them. Luana, I have Tracy on this side helping. Luana on this side. In case anyone goes rogue, right? Okay, we're going to start with our nominees in the area of physical support. So these would be our BG&T, our Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation employees. And we have one person from our nominees here, and that is Joe McLaughlin from Sinsheimer, custodian. Just a sec, Joe. And in addition to Joe, the other nominees that were not able to be here tonight, but I wanted you to know who they are Larry McAllister, Baywood custodian. Mario Gonzalez, BG&T locksmith. And Terry Fossmeyer, Teach Pacific Beach custodian. Okay, you can go. Okay, you all get to shake Joe's hands and congratulate him. Yeah, thanks. Our next group of employees is our clerical support group. So these would be all of our secretaries and accountants and fantastic clerical folks that we have working in our district. So I would like to call up here Stephanie Velt from Del Mar. In addition to Stephanie, the other people nominated that were not able to be here tonight are Debbie Hymas from Monarch Grove and Nancy Bray from Morro Bay High School. So now you go. You can see these were really, really hard choices. We had some fantastic nominees. This next group is a very large group. It is our school support group. And so there are many people that are here from our school support group, so we very much appreciate it. And we're going to have them line up over here and then go through. So first, we have Rhea Rupucci, Del Mar Crossing Guard. Next, we have Christina Cassidy, food service worker. So proud of you. Next, we have Debbie Kramer, Sinsheimer library technician. Next, Brian Weber, IS&T computer technician. Next, we had Jennifer Sawyer, library tech from Slo High. And our last nominee who's present is Cassandra Hodgkin from Loams. Our other nominees that were unable to make it tonight from our school support group are Amanda Odell Roach from Monarch Grove, Betty Ayotte from Morro Bay High School, and Michael Onarud from Morro Bay High School. Okay. Go for it. Okay, now you get to shake all these. Going to be doing photos in the back corner of the whole group, so Luana will take you back that direction, or you can head back that way, school support group, and we're going to get photos of the group.
And thank you to Mark Nakamura, who is doing our photos here tonight. Okay, our last group is, well, our second to last group, actually, is a group that is, I'm proud to see there are so many nominees from this group, is our administrative and management group, and many of them are here tonight. So our first person is Jennifer Donnelly, principal at Baywood. Rick Stimson, BG&T supervisor. Darla Patistic, Teach Elementary principal. Carl Bloom from Loams. Shannon Cox, our kitchen supervisor. And there were two administrative management individuals that were nominated that were unable to be here tonight, and that is Kyle Pruitt from Morro Bay High School. And Nick Frost from San Luis High School. Okay, go for it. And make sure you guys head to the back for a group photo. Congratulations to all of you. Our next group of nominees are our teachers from our schools, so I'm going to call them up. First, we have Shauna Robson from Teach, grade 4. We have Terry Block, who was unable to make it because she got ill today, but Terry Block from Los Ranchos, grade 4. John Kirsten, Monarch Grove, 4-5 combination class. Good job. Sandy Emmerich, Smith, transitional kindergarten. Hey, congrats. Charles Pearson, Lambs, industrial technology. Joshua Waldman, Loams Humanities and STEAM.
Way to go.
Daniel Fahey, Morro Bay High School English and AVID. And last but not least, Jan Fecho, San Luis High School Computer Science.
Okay, Tracy, you can get in here. Congratulations. Now you get to go say hi to all these guys.
John, can you round all these guys up back there for a photo as soon as, you know, they'll follow you. I'm sure they will. So as you can see, our nominees were absolutely phenomenal, and our group had a very difficult task in choosing the winners. So now I'm going to introduce to you our winners and speak a little bit about each one of them. So for physical support, I'd like to call up Wendy Hall. So Wendy has to stand here and be embarrassed while I talk a little bit about her. But Wendy is the custodian at Bishop's Peak. So when you ask someone to think of endless, never-stopping energy and effort, images of the Energizer Bunny might come to mind. However, if you were to ask teachers, staff, or students at Bishop's Peak Elementary, they would likely describe our hardworking custodian, Wendy Hall. Wendy is a gift to our students and staff. Wendy is kind, reliable, adaptable, professional, positive, and solution-focused. Wendy goes above and beyond, always with a positive attitude. She cares deeply about the quality of her work and sets extremely high expectations for herself. She genuinely cares about the members of the Bishop's Peak community. Wendy embodies the school rules. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, take care of this place. Wendy wants to make Bishop's Peak a school where teachers are able to focus on teaching high-quality lessons and students are able to focus on learning. She problem solves even before teachers ask for help. A couple of times a year, Bishop's Peak hosts a family barbecue. In events like these, Wendy's skills truly shine. Every detail is thoroughly thought out and planned from start to finish. She is adept at predicting what is needed so that events run smoothly. Bishop's Peak is fortunate to have Wendy. She is an outstanding custodian and an even better person. And the nomination was signed by the entire Bishop's Peak staff. It was really wonderful, and they told all sorts of stories about her finding mice and all sorts of other things. But if I told you all those stories, we'd be here for a long, long time. So you have to hit Wendy up later for those stories. So our winner from the clerical support group is Pat Schiavo from Loams. Yep, it's just a little paragraph. Pat is an invaluable employee at Los Osos Middle School. She truly has the pulse of the school. She is aware of all the roles that need to be played in the office and can slide into whatever role needs to be covered. Pat is also meticulous with the Loams records. She is very proactive and facilitates, protective probably also, but proactive and facilitates the annual transfer of records to Morro Bay High School and the receiving of records from our feeder elementary schools. Her organizational system is impeccable. In addition to managing these jobs, she is also our counselor's secretary and manages the calendars for all of our SSTs, 504s, and IEPs. Pat is a tremendous resource of historical information for our site. Pat has been an active community member for over 30 years, working at both Morro Bay High School and Los Osos Middle School. This proves invaluable when working with many of our families. Congratulations to Pat.
Thank you, Kristen. Now you get to go say hi.
So our next group is school support. And you saw how large that group was of nominees. And our committee really struggled. So we picked two people. We have a co-winners tonight because we couldn't choose. So the first person I'm going to call up is Terry Wright, library tech from Del Mar. So Terry is Del Mar's celebrated library technician, and she truly loves what she does. She maintains the library in an efficient and welcoming manner and makes it a place where students want to be. On any given day, you will find children playing chess, working on a puzzle, doing an art project, or cuddling up with a good book in the library. This is because Terry opens up the library to students both during morning recess and at lunchtime. Each year, Terry coordinates our Battle of the Books. From the start of the year, she makes it an exciting event and encourages students to qualify for the battle by reading at least 5 of the battle books. When a student reads all 30 battle books, she recognizes them with a celebration helium balloon. Our battle in May is a grand event that brings together parents and students in a reading celebration. Terry also remains aware of funding opportunities and has written and received teach grants to bring authors to Del Mar. She helped a fifth grade class secure a $1,000 grant for the fifth grade outdoor school experience. Terry is truly dedicated to making sure the students of Del Mar are instilled with the love of reading, encouraging them to discover books that can inspire, spark, and ignite learning. Congratulations to Terry. So our second winner from the school support category is Carrie Regal Parks from Monarch Grove. Carrie is a paraeducator. Carrie has always been dedicated to student achievement. She has worked with some of the most challenging student behaviors seen by her teacher in the past 16 years. Carrie has always had a positive outlook, works hard every day to come up with solutions, and has never uttered a negative word. She faces challenges head-on while remaining calm and professional. Carrie rides the bus every day, Route 25, to assist with a student. And by the way, one of the nominations came in from the bus driver. She not only helps her assigned student, but any other student who rides the bus. Carrie always has a smile on her face and kind, encouraging words in her heart. Carrie is a role model to all teachers, mothers, and paraeducators. Congratulations. So I know you can't figure out who our administrative manager person is because she's sitting here in the front row. But Amy Shields, director of ISLOP, come on up. Now I get to talk about Amy. She says brief. No, it's like 3 pages, Amy. No. Amy Shields is one of a kind. She has an amazing leadership influence, has successfully managed change through multiple transitions, has an in-depth knowledge of curriculum, instruction, and assessment, has unwavering ethics, and always places kids first. Amy brought all schools and school communities on board with a shared vision of learning, developed common assessments, organized district-level professional development, and headed the adoption of a new reading, writing, science, and math curriculums. Busy, yeah. Amy Shields is a fierce advocate for student learning and professional growth. During her tenure, there have been seismic shifts in teaching and learning. 8 years ago, our district adopted the Common Core state standards. At that time, we adopted the teaching framework based on the work of Charlotte Danielson. She led a new team of instructional coaches and has worked tirelessly to develop a coaching model that best supported student achievement. Amy has relentlessly championed a culture of professional growth, optimizing achievement for all students. And for this, we nominate Amy Shields. Yeah. I'd like to remind all of our winners to make sure to get your photo taken with Dr. Prater so we can hang them on the wall in the personnel building. So, is that mine? Thanks, Emily. See why she's District Teacher of the Year right there? Is that yours or mine? No, that's not mine. That's somebody else's. Maybe that's Amy's. Your phone's going off. It's okay. I thought it was mine, so I'm so much happier that it's yours. Our last award winner tonight is our District Teacher of the Year, Emily Capilano. And Emily will go on to represent us at the county level. Emily is a third grade teacher. Emily is an educator who regularly goes above and beyond both inside and outside of the classroom to enhance each student's educational experience. She is an innovative thinker when it comes to curriculum and pedagogy, a top-notch collaborator, and critical member of the Baywood team. I think your parents want pictures, so I think you need to come over on this. See? I could sell that, right? See? When you walk into Emily's classroom, it is immediately apparent that the students are engaged in deep thinking. There is evidence everywhere, from carefully designed anchor charts and mini lessons to targeting small group or one-on-one instruction to the students' academic discourse. All of this is evidence that Emily puts deep thought into the individual needs of every single student in her classroom. Emily's rapport with the students and parents helps create a learning environment that is extremely positive, upbeat, caring, and filled with high expectations. Her coworkers say it is a joy to work with Emily on a daily basis. Her positive demeanor and eagerness to grow students is contagious. She is one of the teachers at Baywood that other teachers look to for advice, guidance, and ideas for all things education. Emily is an incredible teacher, colleague, and a member of our district. There is something truly special about Emily and her role as a teacher at Baywood Elementary. Congratulations to Emily. So I'd like to remind all of our winners to get a photo with Dr. Prater and any board members that you would like, and thank you to Mark for doing photos. And we are now going to celebrate, take a, do you want me, 15-minute break? 15-minute break. This is big time, you guys. And we're going to have Madonna in cake in the back. Congratulations to everybody.
Attention, school board members. It's time to reconvene the meeting. Come on back. Mrs. Shepherd, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Dr. Prater. All right. Well, was that not just the best? Thank you all. The remainder of you who are here, thank you all for coming in and showing support for our employees of the year and sort of by proxy, all of the employees in our school district who work so hard to every day make a difference for the kids in our communities. So let's move on to item number 6.01, correspondence. The board did receive an email dated May 1st from Lynn D. Sterner, a neighbor of Monarch Grove, regarding private roads surrounding the school. It's now time for us to move on to public comment, and I'm just going to review the public comment protocol before we start. Anyone wishing to speak either as an individual or a representative of a group, will be given an opportunity at this time. And to assist, please let us know. You need to stand and be recognized. Give your name and, if group, if any, that you're representing. Your presentation should be as brief as possible. We do strictly limit the presentations to 3 minutes, with a total time of about 20 minutes, unless the board decides that there's more time necessary. You can pass out materials to the board. If you have materials to pass out, please give them to Mrs. Holmes or Luana, Mrs. Campbell. Also, we do have a document camera available for your use if you'd like to share something with the board that way. You can ask questions of the board. Either I or Dr. Prater may answer them at this time, or you may be referred to them for a reply. We will not take action on any item that's brought forward during public comment, because that would be an illegal act, since it would not be an agendized item. And finally, you can offer criticism of our operations and programs, but in public session, we won't hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against any employee of the system. There are other ways of doing that. So seeing that, Mrs. Sheffer, would you like to go ahead and call the first person?
I have a yellow slip for Sandra Knapp. Would you like to address us at this time?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. It's already on.
Oh.
I'll make sure that works for you.
Oh, perfect. Good evening. My name is Sandra Knapp. I'm otherwise known as Amsterdam Mom from Los Osos. My daughter will be attending Monarch Grove in the fall. We just went to Kindergarten Roundup, and we received this lovely book, which I hope is getting passed around. I put post-it marks on 5 pages. And what surprised me about the Roundup was a lot of rumor going around about the kindergarten class size being upwards of 28, two sections of 28, though I maybe don't have those numbers right. But has anyone ever been to a 5-year-old birthday party with more than 20 5-year-olds running around? I have. It's crazy. And while I have seen through the presentation earlier this evening that clearly we have some outstanding teachers and staff and support through our public schools, I think imposing that size on any one individual is a little bit much. I've heard there's also going to be a potential of 3 classes with a size of 18. And what my daughter was asking me after we read this book several times was, "Mommy, is my class size going to be this big?" And I said, "No, honey, I don't think so." But what I'm hopeful about is that several of the families are super involved and want to participate. So irregardless of what we end up with, 28, 30, I don't know, or 18 in 3 sections, we're going to be advocates for our kids. And I don't know that a lot of other parents could make it out tonight because of T-ball and dinner and whatnot. But I'm here representing them. I don't know anyone else from Los Osos is here but me, but here I am. So what I wanted to point out was there's several different seating situations that represent basically what she's experiencing now in her kindergarten experience at the Cal Poly Learning Lab, and she's loving it. And she's seeing that they play and they tumble and they sing songs, but every time she would count out the students. And that's, you know, I didn't go to public school. I went to private school. So this is my first experience in this type of environment where there's budgetary requirements, there's attendance requirements, and all these new things that I'm learning about. And all I want to do is tell her you're going to be fine, but I don't know in a class size of upwards of 28 that anybody can really have any meaningful instruction and sing a song all the way through when someone needs to go to the bathroom, someone bonks somebody else, someone's blowing their nose, someone's picking their nose, someone's hitting the other kid. I'm just concerned about how they're going to be able to learn. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much. And we appreciate all parents who advocate for their children. So thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close public comment and move on to item number 7.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, Julia Lang and myself will be presenting the budget tonight to the board, so I'm going to save most of my comments for that time period. I will say that the governor did release May Revise, which didn't have too many surprises, to be honest with you, although state revenues are up. His focus is, again, as it's been for the last 3 or 4 years, to really any extra money, put it towards one-time funds. For us, San Luis Coastal, that's a positive thing because we normally receive those funds as well. So it looks like, again, if it passes in July, it looks like our one-time revenues will be up, which in light of not getting the mitigation funds, you know, through the PUC, this is something that it's super helpful for us and has been over the past few years to receive those one-time monies. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Any questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Okay. Let's move on to item 7.02, Ed Services Update. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. A few things. We have many schools that have received many awards this year, and as Ratik mentioned, in addition to Los Osos Middle School receiving a Schools to Watch at the state and national level, we also had Del Mar teach, as well as our entire district, be honored for being a distinguished school, the only one in our whole region. And Ratik is right, U.S. News and World Report did report San Luis Obispo High School in the top 10% of California schools and 95th percentile within our nation. So pretty incredible honor to add to the other honors that many sites have received this year. So congratulations. Wanted to let you know that we will have our first Education Foundation Board meeting here at the end of May, and we're looking forward to some people that have been honored by being requested to be part of that board and are looking forward to kind of the next step with our foundation. A lot of people have been attending open house. We still have a few open houses taking place, so that's a great opportunity for families to connect with their teachers as well as their school site and look for ways to see all the great things their students have accomplished this year. And this is the season kind of for celebrations and ceremonies. So many of those are starting, and we encourage people to look for opportunities to celebrate students and the sites. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's move on to the Measure D update. And that would be back to Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, we held our Measure D study session last week where we went over all the Measure D budgets. Hopefully that was very insightful for the board to kind of get updated on where we're at and what's happening around the district. We do have a tour that we're going to take that was agendized today for Thursday that I'll be taking board members around to all of our surplus sites to look at those. There's several projects, of course, that are both finishing up now as well as moving forward. So a lot of construction, a lot of infrastructure work is going to happen this summer in preparation for some big projects, of both, in particular, two comprehensive high schools. We did receive our bid for Bishop's Peak, which came in under our estimates, which was fantastic, which we'll be bringing that to the board. And then we have one item tonight, which is a paving project at Los Osos Middle School and Morrow Elementary.
Thank you. Yes. Sorry, Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I just want to ask Mr. Pinkerton if he'll be driving us on Thursday.
I will be.
Okay, thank you.
Uber, no.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to item number 8.01, and that would be resolution number 18-17-18, developer fee increase. Mr. Pinkerton.
This will look extremely familiar to the board as we pass this resolution. The board did that at our last meeting. Unfortunately, in about the third paragraph of this, it stated that the developer fees had been increased by the state board in February of 2016. Well, that was the last time that the developer fees were increased, but this time it was actually done in January of 2018. So in lieu of protests, having any types of issues in the future because of that particular misprint and speaking with our attorney, we decided it would be best. We brought that resolution back to the board for approval with the correction made.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board right now? I'm going to go to the public then. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this item? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mr. Quisenberry, looks like you're doing it.
I move the adoption of resolution number 18-17-18 on developer fees.
And the rescission.
And the rescission of 17-18.
Okay, so we have a motion. Okay, so we have a motion to for resolution 18-17-18, and included in that resolution is a rescission of resolution number 17-17-18. And this, we have a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Holmes, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Great. Let's move on to item number 8.02. That would be resolution 19-17-18, committed fund balance adult education fund 11, and that will be presented by Julie Lang.
Good evening. This is actually something that we've been doing for about the last 7 or 8 years. I don't know if you recall, but in our budgets, and you'll see it in our budget tonight, we have a line that commits funds to transfer from the adult ed balance that's in the general fund to the adult ed fund. And in order to keep the adult ed fund open for adult ed programs, we need to commit funds to that program. What I didn't realize is that it needed to be a formal resolution. So that's what this is doing, is just making it a resolution to commit those funds for adult ed. And this year we're committing $75,000. You'll see that in the budget.
Okay. Any questions for Mrs. Lang from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to comment on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mr. Millar?
I'll move approval, adoption of resolution number 19-17-18.
So we have a motion. Somebody like Mr. Buckman seconds that. Any further discussion from the board? And seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Great. Let's move on to item number 8.03. This is resolution number 20-17-18, designating San Luis Coastal Educational Foundation as a school district support organization, and that would be Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. This resolution really serves two purposes. One is to show your support for the formation of an education foundation, and then also it just serves as a formality needed for insurance purposes.
Okay. Are there any questions from the board? Mr. Quisenberry.
I understand what this is doing. The question that came to my mind is, do we have a similar relationship with the Teach Foundation, or is this kind of entirely different?
This is different. This would be a foundation that shows your approving, your encouragement, your regular reports, and to work in a complete parallel fashion with the school board.
Thank you.
Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers, and then Mr. Millar.
I was going to make a motion.
I was going to ask a question.
Okay.
You want to?
I'm not sure what the insurance implications are.
Yeah, for insurance purposes, we had to pay, I believe it was a $500 fee for all directors or people within to have some type of insurance, and in order to add that
coverage.
Thank you. Exactly.
Okay,
what I was
I
thinking.
Okay.
It's actually offered through CISC, our current
right.
insurance.
So essentially it's director's insurance. Okay, great. Okay, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I would move to adopt resolution number 20-18-18.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing none, then we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes?
Thank you. I'm sorry I was distracted. Who is the second?
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Ellen was the second.
And Mrs. Sheffer was the second.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Great. Thank you. Let's move on to item number 9.01. And for those of you here, this is one of the, I'm just going to say that this is one of the most important items that we're going to have possibly this year. And this is the public hearing and first reading of our 2018-2019 Local Control Accountability Plan, better known as LCAP. The way that I'm going to conduct the hearing is that Mrs. McGrath will make the presentation, and of course, board members, if you have questions during the presentation, you know, you can ask Mrs. McGrath about them. After Mrs. McGrath's presentation, if we have other questions, go ahead and ask them. Then at that point, I'll open the public hearing and take public input. And then, of course, we would close the public hearing. We will. This is not an action item. This is a public hearing. So, Mrs. McGrath. Yeah, Mrs. McGrath, do you want questions from the board during the presentation, or would you rather that we wait until afterwards?
The end is going to be the overview, and that might be a logical time to ask questions during that.
Okay.
Okay to begin? Yes, thanks. So as you can imagine, a 177-page document required an incredible amount of work from a variety of people. So I just want to first acknowledge the efforts of Ms. Amy Shields, Ms. Diane Frost, Ms. Julie Lang, especially, because they really own it. And although there was an exhaustive amount of feedback and input gathered from a variety of stakeholders, there's people there that really put an amazing amount of work into this. So I just would like to start by acknowledging that. Also, just to remind you, all districts in California are required to develop a local control accountability plan. It does combine both our educational plan with the district's budget for that. So the LCAP overview, which is the paper that you have there in front of you, provides kind of a simplified view of the district's focus areas based on the plan. So we will review that here in just a second. You will remember that the LCAP for 2018-19 does contain five different sections. So there's the 2017 to 2020 plan summary. So just a reminder that this is the second of a three-year plan. We have an annual update as well as stakeholder engagement, goals, actions, and services, and a demonstration of increased or improved services for our unduplicated students. So as I mentioned, there really were exhaustive outreach efforts this year. So the LCAP for 18-19 has been revised based on feedback that included the establishment of an LCAP advisory committee, new this year, student senate that Dr. Prater began, Common Ground Task Force as well. And we also gathered information from site presentations that Mr. Pinkerton and I conducted, presentations to bargaining teams, parent groups, as well as parent, community, and staff LCAP survey input. And each secondary site also participated in the Youth Truth Survey results. So this was an excellent way for us to gather feedback from our secondary students and for that information to impact our LCAP. So I would like to guide you to the summary page. You will notice here in this LCAP overview that on the side that has the starts with the gray goals at the top and the largest section is green, you will see there that you see our five focus areas along the top and the goal that we're trying to accomplish for rigorous, relevant, engaging instruction and curriculum, then our multi-tiered academic supports, our culture of care, technology and innovation, and our data culture. And then you can see organized is the stakeholder input. So first you'll find input from students. Then you'll find input from parents and community, as well as our input from staff. Based on that input, and considering that's the second year of a three-year plan, you can turn to the back and notice here's where we have outlined the outcomes that we are looking to achieve in these five areas, as well as the major action steps. I also just want to guide you to this document, which we're calling the Local Control Accountability Plan Goals, Action, and Budget. So this one is a little bit of a simplified version. This is what I refer to on probably a daily, weekly basis to continue to look for, are we reaching those goals and conducting the actions. This one is a little bit easier to understand. It's kind of our template versus the state template that just tends to be a little bit cumbersome. And then we do, of course, have the full document, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and this is just the first reading.
So for the public, Mrs. McGrath, all of these documents are available for the public, is that correct?
Correct, and all attached here.
Okay, and where would the public find these documents if they wanted to really do a deep dive, for example, into the 170-some-odd page LCAP?
So I believe you can find the past ones on the website, but we wouldn't post the finalized. So you can see them here from the board docs. We wouldn't post the finalized until we completed the drafts and you had approval. But within the website, on the top left under About, the first section there is LCAP LEA plan, and you can see those detailed documents there.
Okay. And again, just for anybody that's interested, you can go to our website. I believe we have Mrs. Holmes, would it be under Board of Education where we would have the agendas?
Oh.
Okay.
Under About.
School Board. There should be a link to, there we go. And so you'll go to that site that says Board Docs on it. You'll go to meetings. Yeah, you can either do a search or you can go to meetings and look for this meeting, and then it would be under agenda item 9.01. Okay, so anybody that's interested. So are there any questions from board members right now about this? Mr. Millar.
Excuse me. I ran into a couple of terms, and I want to make sure I understand them. And the first was EL walks. Now, I saw that both in reference to students having EL walks and then teachers or staff. Can you sort of give me the concept behind that?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So this is a professional development activity that took place to look at the amount of academic talk that is happening with our EL students. So the amount of discourse that takes place in a student's day, as we know in research, it drastically increases a student's ability to learn and improve their language skills. So what we did is created a small group of adults within the school, and they would shadow an English language learner and watch the interactions, how much talk time is happening for that student and how many opportunities are given for that student, which gives us really valuable input from an adult educator perspective about what we can do to ensure that we're creating an environment where a student has a maximum amount of opportunity to increase their English learning.
So the results of those EL walks are brought back to the classroom through changes in pedagogy and
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Good. And then I've had two or more races explained to me, which I understand better now. What is linked crew intentional recruitment? I know that it has to do with student engagement, but if you could explain a little of that for me.
You're right. So at the middle school and high school level, you'll hear link crew and web. So these are groups where students look for ways to engage other students. So what you'll find is for, let's say, Los Osos Middle School, it has 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. They will engage 8th grade students that are ready to play kind of a leadership role and to look for ways to engage and to pull in and make the 6th and 7th grade students feel like they're part of the LOMS community. So they create welcoming activities as well as ongoing activities so that they can serve as kind of a peer mentor and help the students feel welcome, feel that they can understand how to navigate the system. And as we all know, the more a student feels engaged and like they have someone there that cares about them and is helping to guide them through how to be successful at the school, you can often hook a kid in and help them to be successful.
Great. So it's student-driven, staff monitor, staff managed.
Exactly.
Very exciting. Thank you.
Other questions from board members? I just want to say I think I actually kind of like the new template as much as one can like something from a Sacramento mandate. I appreciate the retrospective of how we did last year and how that drives what our goals and our spending should be this year. I really think when I looked back at it, we have some real strong successes. You know, obviously there are things that we need to continue to work on, but it feels to me that we have been doing some things right, and we are slowly but surely closing the achievement gap, which we know is tremendous, and we're able to look at that. One question I think people might ask is a lot of the achievement goals, we continue to talk about 5%, 5% achievement, you know, 5% increases year to year. Could you explain how we get to 5% and why that might be important?
Yeah, good question. I believe that right now we're at the beginning stages of some of the assessments that changed statewide. And so when you're sitting at 60-ish percent, when you're sitting at 70%, we look at what is a reasonable yet challenging enough goal to be able to make significant improvement. And if we continue to make that improvement, would it keep us on the trajectory to be where we want to be eventually? So that is, you know, here kind of in the more beginning stages, that's what we look at from a really global perspective. I will also tell you that sites make very specific goals based on the exact students that they see at their site. So they'll look at how many third graders do we have in this category, what number are we looking at, how can we target that, and how can we move that, and then they'll set site-specific goals that probably, honestly, have a little more meaning to them based on individual students.
Great. And then the last question I have, the board and the district have made a commitment to equity. Can you just describe really quickly how this LCAP plan that we're proposing will help lead to equity for our students?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Equity is a big addition, right? You will see within Culture of Care that was a huge addition, financial commitment as well as a commitment to resources, to actions, and to staff. So we started this, and we've been sharing that some key members have been attending an Equity Institute and really going down as a team and attending sessions on the weekends to say, how can we kind of challenge our own thinking and our own biases and actions that we do sometimes that may that we need to question and that we need to kind of pick up those rocks and ask ourselves, what can we do to help every single student achieve to the highest level? So they really came back inspired and worked to create collaboratively with our administrative leads to say, how can we create a plan to be able to take an honest, respective, and respectful and kind of reflective look at our own practices and what can we do to further close that achievement gap? And how can we begin to have those kind of hard conversations and really look at what can we do? So I applaud Diane Frost. Rick Mayfield's going to really take the lead on this next year. Kristen Newland, Aaron Black, Sean Allstott have attended this and have really been inspired and worked with the group to create a plan so that we can begin to explore that next year.
Great. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. I'm going to lean over and use Jim. So this is my question, not Jim's. So actually, all I wanted to do is along Chris's points of equity, as I was reading this, I noticed in a number of places that the growth among EL and SED students way surpassed the growth among all students in the district. So I just wanted to congratulate you on that because that's exactly what we need to do to start closing the achievement gap. And so obviously something's working, and that's great.
A lot of effort by a lot of great educators, you're right.
Thank you very much.
Great. Is there anybody else? Any other questions or comments from board members? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on the first reading of the 2018-19 Local Control Accountability Plan, our LCAP. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Let's move on to item number 9.02. This is a public hearing and first reading of the proposed 2018-19 budget. This is probably the second most important thing that we'll do because the budget is intimately tied to the LCAT. Mrs. Lang.
It is. And as you know, when we have the public hearing for the LCAP, we also have to have the public hearing for the budget on the same evening. So I think Kim is going to give me the clicker here, and we'll get going on the PowerPoint. And, oh,
hey,
look at that. We got
another
that?
Hit on YouTube.
All right.
Sensation, YouTube sensation.
So as well as the LCAP, there is a lot of effort that goes into preparing the budget for each year, and I want to thank everybody that was involved with that, including everyone in instructional services and student services and BG&T and everyone in my department that puts this together. It's a lot of work, but it's nice to have it done. So we're going to be looking at not only our budget for 18-19, but also our estimated actuals for 17-18, because that kind of creates the beginning balance for 18-19. And let's see if I know how to work this. No. Uh-oh. There we go. Got it. Now, as you know, our estimated actuals are as of 5/5/18, and what that looks at is what we currently have in the budget. And we do try to adjust our budgets for estimated actuals. We try to look at things and more closely reflect what's in the budget the way we think it's going to end at the year, but we also have a lot of things budgeted that we probably are not going to spend. We have a lot of encumbrances on POs still that we don't know if we're going to spend. So when you look at that column with the estimated actuals, you see our beginning balance was $17 million. We're estimating our revenues at $94 million. Our estimated expenses are at about $96 million. And that created a surplus or a deficit of $1.8 million, which leaves our ending fund balance at about $15,214,000. Now, this is the estimated actuals that you would find in the SACS report if you bother to look through that big, long report that we do. What we really think is going to happen and what is projected on the 10-year budget is we have the same beginning balance, obviously. We think that we're going to have some deferred revenues that are going to go be transferred from this year into next year to be spent. So we think our revenues will be about $92,700,000. Our estimated expenses, we know we're not going to spend everything that we have budgeted right now. So we think that's going to go down to about $93 million, which would mean our deficit would go down to about $700,000. And we're thinking our ending fund balance would be closer to about $16,300,000 instead of the $15 million. Some of the things that are in the 18-19 budget instead of the 17-18 budget up here. We put in a 3.5% property tax increase. We also put in the depreciation for Diablo Power Plant, so that's included in the property tax revenues. We did not budget anything for the PG&E settlement and probably won't until we actually know we're going to get that money. Our one-time mandated cost reimbursement is budgeted at $295 per ADA, which is what they were talking about at the governor's budget in January. Since then, they have released the May revise, and that's actually increased a little bit. So we'll probably, I think it's increased to $344 per ADA, which will be an additional $350,000 or so that we may get if that ends up getting into the final budget. Our MAW revenues are budgeted at $180. Those are coming in more consistently now, so that's a little bit higher than we have been budgeting. We have the revenue for the Cayucas Coast Agreement in there. At 22%, and I think it's around $110,000 for this year. Next year it'll be at 55%, which will be about $275,000, and the year after that it'll be fully funded, and we're expecting around $500,000-$600,000 from that. We also have a new agreement with Bellevue Santa Fe, and they will be charged an administrative fee of 2%, and that's in our budget as well. We do not budget for donations or billing accounts. We will budget our deferred revenues after we have closed the books for 17-18. The County Office of Education always sends us special ed estimates, so those are in our current budget based on their estimates. And we do not have any transfers between Fund 20 and the general fund in the budget. And Fund 20 is the other post-employment benefit. And we're going to get a new actuarial on that, which should be hopefully by the end of this month. So you can see that our revenue sources, the property taxes make up about 78% of our total revenues right now. The other LCFF revenue includes things like those former categorical funds, the EPA funds, the transfer to the adult ed fund that we talked about earlier tonight, the payment that we make to the charter, and we also get property tax for special ed students. Federal revenue is about 3%. That includes the titles, Title I, Title II, Title III, some other Perkins and Medi-Cal billing. State revenues are at 6%, which is a little higher than usual, and that's because of that one-time funding from the governor. That's in state revenues. We always pull out that STRS on behalf that the state wants us to put in there because it's just on paper. We don't actually receive the revenue, but we do have to account for it. And then our local revenues right now are budgeted at 4%. You can see from the graph that the LCFF amount has definitely caught up to where we are in, as a basic aid district. But in 18-19, the LCFF is fully funded. So you can see it kind of jumped up a little bit between 17-18 and 18-19 from 8,450 to 8,959. But we think every year after this, it's probably only going to receive COLA increases. So we think our property taxes are going to be on about the same trajectory as the LCFF increases, which means we're going to stay basic aid probably for as long as we can foresee. In expenditures, we have the 1% cost of living adjustment and step and column increases in salaries. Our STRS rate is 16.28% in 18-19. That's up from 14.43%. PERS is up to 18% from 15.53%. We budgeted health and welfare with a 2% increase. That may be a little bit high, and we will look at our health and welfare accounts after the first payroll runs. Positions have been adjusted for enrollment projections. As you know, I think elementary enrollment has been a little bit down, so we're actually down about 10.25 positions. There were a few positions added to San Luis High School. Site allocations are always budgeted at 90% of the former year's seabeds, I should say 2017 seabeds, and they'll be adjusted at 2018 seabeds up to 100% of their allocation. The LCAP expenses have been budgeted, and we'll go over those in a minute. We have an election year this year, as you probably well know, so we put in some budget for that because that costs the district some money. And we will budget our carryover amounts after we have closed the books for 17-18. So you can see in our salary and benefits, our certificated salaries make up about 37% of all of our expenditures. Classified salaries make up 17%, and administrative salaries make up about 5%. Our total benefits, not including the STRS on behalf, is up to 22% of our total expenditure budget. The STRS on behalf is about 3%. Books and supplies is 5%. That'll probably go up after we put carryover amounts in there. Services and other operating expenses includes things like insurance and field trips and transportation and phones and consultants, and it's a catch-all. So there's a lot of things in that. That's 9% of our budget. We have 1% budgeted in capital outlay, and the other transfers out is mostly the transfer we make to to the county office for the special ed students that they serve. So salary and benefits are budgeted at about 84% of revenue right now. And as I said, employee benefits are 22%. I think they're up from about 20% last year. So in the LCAP, we do like to keep this budget separate so we can track the expenditures that we budget. So We use discretionary codes 3910 through 39, that should say 3950, whenever possible. Our total LCAP budget is about $7 million, and the supplemental amount is about $4.7 million, and that's the money we use to serve the EL kids, the low socioeconomic kids, the foster and homeless. So those are services that we provide sort of on top of normal educational services. Right before we, just last week, I think, SELPA released an interesting study that they found that I thought I would include with this, that the statewide findings for special ed found that the federal funds that the state receives covers about 8.85% of all special ed expense. State funds cover about 26.7% of the costs, and local funds cover about 65% of the cost, 64.45% of the cost. We found at San Luis Coastal we're pretty close to that. Our federal funds actually cover about 10.2%. State funds cover about 24%. Our local funds cover 63% of our special ed expenses. And we do have contracts with other districts that cover about, that's about 2.8% of our expenses. And just so you can see that the number of students that we're serving is continually increasing and our expenses are continually increasing, but our revenue is actually a little bit lower than it was in 2012-13. This is something we're required to do by the state. We need to identify any expenses above what we need to put in our minimum reserve for economic uncertainty, which for us is 3% of our expenditures. So 3% equals about $2.8 million. So in addition to that, we assign some of our balances out of our reserves. One of those is the adult ed balance at $478,000. There's a little bit left in the employee retention account at $21,940. We still have that instructional materials realignment for textbook adoptions at $1.5 million. Catastrophic leave is at about $107,000, and that, of course, belongs to the employees, not really the district, so we need to set that aside. We are estimating our general fund carryovers, that's school site and department carryovers, at about $444,000. And, of course, we keep the lottery balances 1 year in arrears. That's about $1.1 million. Of course, the board authorized our minimum reserve for economic uncertainty at 10%, so that's an additional 7%, which equates to about another $6.6 million. So our total assigned balance is a little over $10 million. We have an unassigned balance close to $2 million, which means our reserves that are in excess of that minimum is $12 million. And I just thought I would put this up there to let you know that we really are working very, very hard to keep the light at the end of the tunnel turned on. And I think Ryan is going to go over with you some of our ideas on how to do that.
You know, why don't we start with any questions about the budget thus far with Julie that the board may have on so far in the presentation before I go over the tenure.
Mr. Buckman, followed by Mrs. Roger.
Thanks. So I'm going to use this microphone because it works. I have a couple of questions, but as I was going through this, it appeared that there were three different budgets, that there was dollar amounts that were different across three different sets of the actuals. And so can you help me understand that?
Yes, like in the first slide, like I showed you, we have the official estimated actuals, which are what are in our SACS report, which looks at our budgeted amounts. So that's one of the things I think you're talking about. That's what's in our SACS. It's our official estimated actuals. But then we look at, historically, what do we spend for materials and supplies? We put that into that 10-year budget and get a more realistic picture because we know that some of that's going to fall to the end. So we use this projected year for 17-18 to see where we think we're going to end. And then we have our official budget. That's in the SACS budget, and then we have what we estimate in the 10-year budget as what we're probably really going to see at the end of the year based on historical averages.
Okay, so I'll work with that one. And I noticed in the SACS report that on books and materials, it shows that we're going to spend about 20% less on books and materials, and so that was a little bit of a concern.
That's just because we don't have the carryovers posted in there. Once we close the books for 17-18, we'll have a number of the programs that are going to carry over into 18-19. It's not reflected in the budget yet, but it will be next year, and those always get budgeted in the 4,000 accounts.
Okay, and I guess I had one other. Another concern was the fund balance reserves. It's on Form 25 in there. It was down about 50%.
Oh.
That seemed
Well, that's
a
our
lot.
Developer fee account.
That's and the what? I'm sorry.
Our developer fee account.
Okay.
And we are using that for a lot of the construction projects right now, so that's reasonable.
That's good.
Yeah,
go spend.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Just for anybody that doesn't know SACS's state accounting codes, right? State account codes, something like
account,
that.
Yeah, state accounting software system.
Right. And the reason we do it is that.
I have to look it up now. It's been so long since I've looked at it.
We have this budget, and the state requires that the money be spent in certain categories, and the state assigns numbers to those categories.
Yes.
And so you could compare our district to any other district using those accounting codes, and that's how you can figure it out, Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Julie, I just wanted to ask under the page about our reserves, under unassigned, almost $2 million for computer replacement vehicles, deferred maintenance, blah, whatever. Is it to be assumed that's a sinking fund? That will be spent each year and then replenished out of the general fund?
That is, yes. Right now, basically, that is just the balance that is unassigned. So we actually have some probably restricted accounts that are part of that that we're probably not going to be able to touch. We have some things for next year. For instance, we're going to have increasing costs in our benefits. That's going to go toward next year's benefits. It's just we haven't actually assigned it. So it will sit there as an unassigned balance until we assign it, and it will probably end up being used for something this year.
So elsewhere in the budget would I find the sinking fund for computer replacement? Because I know that that's on a cycle.
Yes, we do have a PC replacement budget. It's part of the LCAP now, so it's actually written into the LEA plan. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's already budgeted.
Thank you.
And I think some people might wonder why it's important for us to carry a 10% reserve as opposed to the statutory 3% reserve. Could you briefly explain to anybody that might be interested why that's so important for our district?
Absolutely. Yes, being a basic aid district, that 3% reserve, the $2.8 million, covers about one half of 1 month's salary and benefits. So if we really did have a fiscal emergency, that's really not going to get us very far. And as a basic aid district, we're actually more at risk, and that's evident now with Diablo closing, that we're going to lose potentially $8 million when Diablo Canyon closes. So having that additional reserve is very important, especially for basic aid districts, because things can be unpredictable.
Mr. Pinkerton, do you want to go through the 10-year budget?
Yeah. So if we can blow it up a little bit, Kim, make it a little bit bigger, because nobody's reading that. So one side of the 10-year budget is revenue projection, the other side is expenditure. So we've gone over this over and over again, and to Mr. Buckman's question, you know, every year if you look at our SACS form, we budget more than we spend. And so if you look at that and that's your bearing, you know, in the public, you're going to think, oh my God, you know. And then what happens is in unaudited actuals, we realize we didn't spend everything, and it ends up being much more balanced, or sometimes even a surplus, sometimes a deficit. So in order to kind of make the public, make our employees realize the reality of where our budget is, we've created the 10-year budget. So it's much more accurate, kind of long-term look at where the budget's going to be. So we did have our Blue Ribbon Committee. that presented to the board. Dr. Prater, myself, just got finished, and Julie got finished with three public presentations, three staff presentations. I did the YouTube video of it. Mandy, my secretary right now, is putting together all the results for the board to share with you. We did have about 300 people complete the survey, which was great, fantastic. So we're tabulating all that information that we will share kind of going forward. And it's critical because it's tied to this. This whole discussion about our budget, where we're at, what's happening, and it's key what Julie has described today is kind of this next year's picture, but this looks at the next 8 years. And so in general, right now, we are very fortunate in that the economy is doing well. The one-time dollars from the governor have been huge over the last few years that have gone towards a mandated cost because it really has provided that mitigation for us. Our property tax revenues have been higher than 3.5, but on an average over the past 10 years, that's about what they've been. And so that's why we use those numbers. And so that has helped with our unitary tax loss. Having 5% property tax increases has actually helped us as we've gone through this. But I want to point out kind of a key thing with this. And so you'll see the revenues show kind of where we're at, why we're not going to fall into basic aid right now, because we have level enrollment overall is a key point. But if you look at the unitary tax number in particular, so like for 18-19 next year, $5.5 million. You know, right now I believe there's a three-year agreement for the employees at Diablo Canyon to work through 19-20, $4.79 million. If for some reason, not saying it's going to happen, but if for some reason that plant were to close in 19-20 after this three-year agreement, they don't pass the next mitigation agreement, there's not another deal to keep the employees going, that that plant shuts down, our district would lose instantly. You'll see the unitary tax amount there, which I can barely read.
$4 million.
From here, but approximately $4 million instantly that year. So why do we need to have an extra reserve? Why is that important? That's a key reason, I would say, over the next few years, vitally important. Now, if you go down to the expenditure page, Kim, to the next one. Now, I just painted a rosy picture about our property taxes in terms of things are good, right? From the it's helping with the unitary tax loss. We are going to go into a recession in the state of California at some time. Okay, the governor's been talking about it for the past 3 years in his budget presentations. What goes up must come down, are Jerry Brown's words. And so, again, this long period, how bad is the recession going to be? Is it going to affect property tax values? You know, are we sheltered here in San Luis Obispo? I don't know, but this is our best guess at what we think it might be. But what we do know that Julie highlighted is that employee benefits make up 22% of our budget now, because of the STIRS and PERS increases. So the same number of employees, or in some cases, $2 million worth of cuts at the district office last year, and we're still at that number and growing. So when you see those STIRS and PERS numbers rising from $6 million to $7 million, $5 million, $3 million to $5 million, I can barely read it. We got to blow it up a little bit, as well as our health care costs increasing over $3 million over those time periods. The property tax values are not keeping up with those numbers. So that's the reason why we have this Blue Ribbon Committee. That's the reason why we've engaged the public, because we know we have to put a plan together. We jump-started it last year, $2 million district office cuts. This year we're looking at trying to, because of enrollment declines, pulling some staff, a couple of people, one of the TOSAs at the district office position is being cut. We had a support person outside of the classroom, Loams and Morro Bay High School, both one position at both of those schools, so and some elementary positions based on enrollment drops. Now, it's still May. We're still waiting to get numbers. I just talked with elementary principals today, looking at enrollment, looking at transfer. So it's a fluid process in terms of those numbers right now, up until probably June, July, when we'll try to make some absolute decisions as we go forward. But I'm in constant contact with principals right now. But the last number at the very bottom is probably the one we need to focus on the most, and that shows what happens to that nice surplus that we were just talking about, those reserves that were 10%, slowly drop down to a red number long term. if we don't continue to do what we have to do to balance this budget on an annual basis. So it's very important, and in particular because personnel costs are 85%, 84% potentially in this budget, but we're not done yet, right? This is just our estimate at this time. It's critical that that's a focus area for us and what that looks like. So we've been slowly doing that. Again, the Blue Ribbon Committee report, we look at both revenue enhancements potentially in the future, as well as ways that we would need to cut. We're trying to do it as slowly as possible. The mitigation agreement would be huge to help us slow this whole conversation down. We'll see what happens with that in October. But again, I think what we'll find is we'll have a balanced budget this year. The governor's, these one-time funds will be great next year. But depending on what happens with the economy, that extra $2 million could go away. And you see that our potential increase in revenues goes to a large deficit the following year, depending on how the economy goes. And so that's just it's a difficult place to be. So it's important, I think, that Dr. Prater work with the board and kind of setting direction for, okay, how are we going to get to this point? Now, the positive thing for the board is that number was $3.5 million last year at the end of the 10-year budget. So because of the reductions, the things that we're trying to do right now, it does make that overall number go down. So instead of a $5 million potential long-term reduction, we're now looking at approximately $2.9 million. That we need to focus on, that we need to work towards. So all of these things, the more we can work on them now, the more important. STRS and PERS scares me, because it seems like every time I turn around, the PERS board is voting to increase the number, from 21 to now 24% long term. And so it's an interesting dynamic, and the whole state of California is it's going to be really interesting when this recession potentially hits and what happens to not just us but to all the school districts in California that have to deal with those rising costs. So that's, again, I feel good about this year. I think we're doing what we have to as a school district in terms of next year and staying positive, slowly making those reductions that we can. Because it does, long-term, put us in a much better place.
Great. Mr. Quisenberry.
So, Mr. Pinkerton, is it true that as we have employees retire and resign, we're looking at attrition, and then that ties also in with the enrollment? You're kind of looking at trying to squeeze some money out of that process,
absolutely.
More mature teachers retire. Yeah. We're getting younger, less expensive teachers, but we're also looking at our enrollment picture and saying, well, maybe we don't need to hire as many teachers.
Yeah, it's difficult, I would say, in terms of looking, again, enrollment, and I'm diving right in because it's, into the enrollment aspect of it. It's tough because for parents, for teachers, they're focused on their site, their grade, where their child's going to be in the class. And so it's, how do you balance that? So you may have a K-3 class size at a school site with 24-1, but you may have two kindergarten classes at 28 and two first grade classes at 20. So, how do you do it? So those are conversations we're having with principals, trying to work it out, trying to not have combination classes whenever possible, as we move forward. So it's definitely something that we're looking at, but definitely not having layoffs is one of our focuses. And we talk about it at the Blue Ribbon Committee. So those retirements, we had no layoffs the board had to vote on this year. So nobody lost their job. Through this process. So it's important that we continue that if we can as we move forward, I think, so that's it's a key point. But retirements do get built into the overall expenditures of certificated. And what you'll see is the actual amount we spend on certificated staff goes down potentially. So we actually less money certificated, but because the jump in retirement and benefits is so high, it actually is worse. We're paying more per employee, but less in overall salary. But it's definitely helping, in terms of that overall number. That's why we're at 84% potentially next year. is because of those retirements.
Great. Other questions from the board? And I would just, for anybody listening, I think one of the things that I appreciate you're really diving into enrollment for next year, because one of the things that can get districts in such serious trouble is overestimating their enrollment over long term, and then it's some really serious problems for school districts.
I don't know if the principals are liking the budget guy overseeing the enrollment, but
I'm sure. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Pinkerton. I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing now. So I will open the public hearing for the proposed budget for 2018-19. Is there anybody that would like to address the board during this public? Please step forward and state your name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Is this a question-answer scenario?
Go ahead. And okay. What you can do is ask the questions, and then if Mr. Pinkerton or Mrs. Lang can answer them, they'll answer them for you, or they may take you aside and talk to you afterwards, or they may say, I don't have that answer right now. We'll help you.
Later.
Yeah, we'll get you the answer for it.
Okay. Good evening again. Sandra Knapp from Los Osos. So one thing I'm seeing and hearing is obviously with – you know, Mrs. Frame leaving, she was like this epic Los Osos teacher, iconic woman that every mother wanted their child to have the first experience with going into public school. She's leaving. So with her and all the other amazing retirees, I see that number jump. And in the back of my mind, I'm wondering, is there a federal program for communities like ours that have had revenue through facilities like Diablo Canyon, eventually going offline and going away at some point? Is there a federal program that can feed into communities like ours to replace that revenue? Is there something on the federal level that can help us locally? And maybe it's just me being naive and wishful, but I kind of see by the expressions on your faces that that's a big fat no.
So, great. So, okay. Thank you. So, I think what Mr. Pinkerton can talk to you about things on the federal level, but I think you should also be aware that our two state legislators, State Senator Monning and Assemblyman Cunningham, have written a bill and we have gotten. It partway through the legislature to help mitigate the closure of Diablo, and we're hopeful that it will pass the legislature. So maybe if you could explain that a little bit more in depth, that would be helpful.
I'll Google it.
Okay.
Now I know where to go. So
great.
Look at that.
Well, we can explain.
Do you know the name of the bill?
It's SB 1090, and Mr. Pinkerton can give you more information and how you can support our position on that bill.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to address the board on during this public hearing? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Let's move on to item number 9.03, dual enrollment courses. This is a first reading, and that would be Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. I'm here this evening with Liz Bohr, and we're happy to present dual enrollment information to you, and this will be the first reading for that. Thank you. I should have gone. So as you remember, our dual enrollment agreement is supported by Cuesta College and in collaboration with our high schools, and Liz Moore has done a great job of helping, especially with the career technical education portion of dual enrollment. There we go. So just a quick reminder, what is dual enrollment? So dual enrollment means that our high school students are completing a course sitting in our high school seats, but with credits for both high school and community college, hence the word dual. And this is a collaborative effort between our high school teachers and the teachers at community college at Cuesta. And for career tech courses, it really helps to create that link to pathways. So as you remember, we're looking at students creating completing a sequence of courses, and the Cuesta course is the next step in that. So why looking at dual enrollment? There's so many benefits to students especially. So we look at kind of opening students' eyes to learning at a collegiate level, kind of demystifying that experience and increasing their aspirations, letting students see, hey, I actually can do this, and maybe this is something I should consider and strive for, as well as a big savings for families. Teachers get great collaboration kind of opportunities because they're working with other teachers teaching the exact same types of courses, and they are financially compensated for the extra duties that they have to complete in order to do this. I'm going to hand this over to Liz to talk about what this means for our students, and then she's going to talk about the courses, and I'll wrap up with some next steps at the end.
What does this mean for our students? The students get to follow the Cuesta registration process, and the Cuesta comes in and literally creates a transcript for the students. And there's no fee for the course. These courses can be, we call them a Cuesta transcript, but it, of course, can go to any university or college that accepts transfer credit. The students are staying right on our high school campus to get this credit. They're just sitting in their high school class. They're it's kind of redundant, eligible to receive the high school credit as well as the Cuesta credit, so they're getting both. They're following all the guidelines of the community college, so they get to know if you're not making it, you're going to get an F. But we really work with the students, so that doesn't happen. And Cuesta has a cap that allows a high school student to take a maximum of 9 units per semester. So, you know, we work with that, and that fits in really well. So which courses are involved for 2018-19? I want you to know for the process, we bring as many teachers to the table as possible to talk to the Cuesta teachers, and it's really a relationship to make these courses happen. We have sports medicine, the video broadcasting, Photoshop, it says pending, but it's since been added, and choir. And we're dropping 2 at Morro Bay, but we hope to get them renewed in December. Computer science and engineering design, because we're having a teacher leave that had been approved, but that agreement will be looked at next round. At Slo High, Jeff Lemkuhl does a great job and has for a lot of years of dual enrolling. We have engineering, drawing, design 2 and 3, and welding, exploring computer science A and B, which is new, video broadcasting. We have a new teacher who got approved since Cherie Jones left, so that's great. Ag sales and marketing is a brand new department at Cuesta, and that's great. And then, the culinary pathway went wild. He got 4 different dual enrollments, and he only has 3 classes, so 1 class is 2 of them. So the new ones are exploring computer science A and B, ag sales and marketing, and culinary, and then we're proposing the construction to dual enroll, but we're working on that for next year.
So just in conclusion, as you can see, this is an incredible opportunity for our students. It really creates a good partnership with Cuesta. It's a nice collaboration opportunity for our teachers, especially in CTE, where they tend to be kind of a singleton teacher in that area, to be able to have someone else to collaborate with. We are really looking at how to add additional courses. We feel like we've done a really solid job in career technical education, but you also have the ability to expand that to our content areas, and we're looking looking at how to do that. So teachers have to meet Cuesta's minimum qualifications. So that's always kind of the trick, is they need to meet the qualifications from Cuesta. And principals have also kind of wrestled with the idea of, how do you handle it when, let's say, there's four English teachers at the 12th grade level, and only two of those teachers meet minimum qualifications for Cuesta, and yet how do you decide which students are in those two or not? So that's always been kind of the obstacle, and the kind of the hiccup is to figure out, do you go ahead and go for it when there's only two of the four maybe that meet those qualifications? And then, you know, how do you decide which students can get in there, and how do you create a master schedule that gets students in there that can benefit the most? And just creates a lot of logistical issues that we need to work through and figure out how to continue that. Liz and I have a couple of follow-up meetings where we're talking to representatives from even other districts and from Cuesta to help us kind of work through what are the next steps and how can we continue to increase these opportunities for our students. We're really thinking about the new indicators. You will see when they're looking at college and career readiness that dual enrollment is something that is considered. And just a reminder, this is a first reading just by Cuesta's request. They ask for this to come a second time to you.
Mrs. Shepherd.
So my question has to do with the unit transfer, in particular with San Luis High being on a trimester and Cuesta being on a semester. Is that a fluid transition?
What Cuesta
transition?
Does, some of the they do the classroom hours, so for instance, some might be 54 hours or 60 or 90, but Cuesta's really good about looking at how many hours, and they call them classroom hours, that the teacher's in front of the students to make it count. They're really detailed, and so typically it wouldn't be your first trimester. It might be your second trimester that they would count.
Okay, so it's based on contact hours?
Yes.
And okay. It just seems like it would be...
So, yeah, sometimes they won't. They won't, of course, won't be accepted, but... If a student, for instance, is in Engineering Design 1 and Engineering Design 2, and that's probably three trimesters, by the end of Engineering Design 2, that trimester, they count for their dual enrollment, that they've covered all the curriculum and had the contact hours by the end of that time. But they just do it in that one trimester.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anybody else from the board? Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Okay, this is, again, a first reading. It will be brought back at our next meeting. Let's move on to item 9.04, proposed revisions to Board Policy 1260, Education Foundation, first reading. You're back up to bat, Mrs. McGrath.
Yes. So you will see here that we had a very small board policy related here, 1260. And notice in the resolution, it did require that we have this policy as well. We looked at CSBA's recommendations, and that's what you will find in red. The board subcommittee did make one recommendation in the sentence you can see. However, the foundation, it used to say, would be encouraged to provide regular reports, and we recommended a little stronger verbiage there of, however, the foundation will provide regular reports. I think the effort there is to ensure that we continue to work side by side and that we stay connected to that foundation. So I think that's a great idea. And then you'll see at the bottom just the consent to use, names, logos, et cetera.
Okay. Are there any questions from board members about this? So I'm going to ask the board, do you want to bring this back for a second reading, or is anybody willing to go ahead and propose this for tonight? We have, it seems like everybody good with us going forward with this tonight. So if somebody would like to make a motion...
I'll move approval of Board Policy 1260, Educational Foundation.
Okay, we have a motion with someone, and seconded by Dr. Eisengrath Rogers. Did I go to the public, you guys?
Yeah.
You know what, I need to go to the public on this. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. We have a motion, a second. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Item number 9.05, Measure D, Award of Bid 296 for Los Osos Middle School and Morro Bay Elementary School Paving Projects. Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, we did this is a design bid build project that went out to bid. We received three bids, Cal Portland being the lowest. The lowest bid available. For the board to know, there were two actually additional alternates that we looked at. One was putting a retaining wall along kind of where the basketball, where a lot of sand and things come over. That was alternate two. And then alternate one, along South Bay Boulevard, there's a kind of a path that goes down along this, you know, along the road there and into it. And so that is one that we're actually telling, in working with the site and talking about not doing that as part of the bid. And the reason being is because there's trees all along that line. And so even if we went through to put asphalt in, it would just be ruined anyways. So we're looking at just doing a DG path instead. So same area, just doing DG path. And that way I don't have to cut down all the trees along South Bay Boulevard. And so we will be keeping all of the trees along South Bay Boulevard to make that happen. So I thought you would appreciate that yes, we don't really want to cut down every single tree that's on our property. So tonight we're asking the board to approve the base bid with Cal Portland, and it just so happens that they also had the lowest bid for the alternative two, which was for the retaining wall. And this is for Morrill Elementary School as well as Los Osos Middle School.
Any questions from the board? Anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Someone would like to make a motion?
Yeah.
Mr. Buckman.
I'll make a motion to approve the bid number 296.
Okay.
I'll second that.
And seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any further discussion? All right, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Action consent agenda. Let me know if you want anything pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, disposal of surplus property. 10.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.04, approval of foreign exchange organizations. And 10.05, approve revisions to board policy 0500, philosophy, goals, objectives, and comprehensive plans, accountability. This would be the second reading.
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.05.
We have a motion to approve 10.01 to 10.05. I'll second that. We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by me. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Move on to item 11.02. I do have an advanced agenda item that I would like to discuss with the board. CSBA right now is soliciting nominations for their Freshman of the Year legislator and for their Legislator of the Year. I would like the board to have a discussion about nominating Jordan Cunningham to be the CSBA Freshman of the Year, particularly for his support in our efforts with SB 1090, as well as our State Senator Bill Monning for Legislator of the Year for his strong support of our school district with SB 1090. So if I could get some support for that.
I would support that. I'd also add that Jordan Cunningham had a very intelligent vote on the mandatory school start issue.
Great. Yep.
Yeah, I would support that as well, and I don't know if the board would support waiving the second reading of this, basically.
Would the board support the second reading of this? So, actually, then we will, you know, I don't know that this requires. What I think we need to do is that we will direct Dr. Prater to complete the application for the Legislator of the Year and the Freshman Legislator of the Year, and I believe it needs to come back to the board for a vote on the board, so we should be seeing that again as an action discussion item in itself, so we're not breaking the Brown Act. Let's move on to item 12.01. Any reports by board members? Who's going first? Mr. Quisenberry.
Okay, I just want to I'll make this as brief as possible. So I have been using the Morrill Bay pool just recently, and I want to tell you how wonderful it is and encourage others to get a chance to get in that water. It's the water temperature is great.
There's also a warm to hot shower outside as well as inside the men's locker room. So and cold showers for those of us who need that. Also, I wanted to mention the Los Osos Rotary, or Rotary of Los Osos, held its scholarship dinner, and we raised $5,000 through that dinner. And I wanted to also mention that we had some nice donations from some board members and participation by Catherine Eisenrath Rogers at the dinner. She was there, and it was great. And just something of local interest, Dolores Huerta, who was one of the founding members of the United Farm Workers, was at Cal Poly. And I got the opportunity to, my wife and I got the opportunity to listen to her speak. And, of course, she's really, really pushing for schools to improve their education for not just for every student, but make sure that they're attending to the needs of the students and making sure that equity is achieved. So anyway, that's it for me. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman, are you next?
Yeah, I was going to skip tonight, but last night I was lucky enough to be one of three presenters at the NAACP. They had their first public education meeting and on the federal Every Student Succeeding Act, and put in place a plan for an education summit in September. So it'll be very good.
Great. And I'm not seeing anybody else. So we'll call this meeting adjourned. We will have our special board meeting this Thursday at 9, and then our next board meeting, I believe, is June, if you can believe it, June 5th, which is really the last week of school, and then we'll be high school graduations that week. So thank you very much, everybody, and thank you for attending the meeting tonight.